This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
It is 6:14 on this Monday morning, March the 24th, and it seems like we waited forever for March to get here from Mardi Gras. Now it seems like it's hanging around for a while. Rain coming in between 9 and noon today. Be aware of that. And then it warms up, really. Highs of 75 today, 79 tomorrow, 80 on Wednesday, 77 Thursday, 77 Friday. And then, unfortunately, no more rain until Saturday, and I got a lot of parades scheduled for then, so we'll have to see how that plays out. Right now, it's 65 degrees, and we're joined by Justin Buechler, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University. How are you doing, Professor? Good morning.
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm okay. Let's talk about ratings, and I saw a couple of different things from a couple of different people over the weekend about President Trump's approval rating. Some say they were good, some say they were bad. Where does his approval rating stand?
Well, the first piece of advice is the same piece of advice that I will always give, which is never look at one poll, because any one poll will have the possibility of a weird sample, and you have variation in question wording. So you always look at the polls in aggregation. So right now I am looking at the polling averages at Real Clear Politics as we speak, and there's very little movement. So if you look at the president's approval rating as he came into office, the ratings were an average approval of 49.2% with a disapproval of 47.8%, very close, with the president just a little bit below 50%. He's never actually cracked 50%, not in his first term and not this term. And if you look right now, where he is right now is just the slightest decline. So he's now at an average approval of 47.9%, disapproval of 48.8%, which is very little movement. So he's a little bit underwater, but it's relatively close to when he came into office. Always look at the polls in aggregation, never look at one poll.
So how does that compare with other presidents?
Okay, so what's happened over the last few years and decades is that everybody's really been locked into partisanship. So Democrats will always evaluate a Democratic president positively and a Republican president negatively. Republicans will evaluate a Republican president positively and a Democratic president negatively. So everybody's really locked in a range. So we actually saw both President Trump in his first term and President Biden looking very similarly with approval ratings below 50%. But never really moving outside a range. Now, if you look at previous presidents in, for example, the late 20th century, where we really have good polling data, so if you look at late 20th century and just the early 21st century, there was a lot more variation when partisanship wasn't quite locked in. So we used to see things like a rally around the flag effect, where there's some major foreign policy event and the president's approval rating just shoots up. So if you think, for example, back to 9/11, when George W. Bush's approval rating went way up over 90%, that kind of thing doesn't really happen anymore. And it's not just that we don't have those unifying foreign policy events. It's also that everybody's just so locked into partisanship that both with former President Biden and President Trump, everybody's just kind of locked in. And you have presidents sitting at approval ratings below 50%, usually above 40%, but kind of hovering in that range.
When it as it relates to the new normal, and it's either win or lose, it's either my guy or your guy or woman, not that a woman has ever been elected, but hopefully one day one will. Is it that the new norm, or do you see that changing, Professor? I know this is just based on speculation and your experience, but have we been through cycles in the country where it's been as partisan as it is now? It's either win or lose, zero sum, right? Either my guy or your guy, and there's nothing in between. Forget policy. It's all about winning or losing. Have there been times in a country like that or not?
Well, I mean, elections are about policy, ultimately, and every election is zero sum. But as far as polarization goes, the mid-20th century was the anomalous period in American history of depolarization. And what I mean by that is that the center of the Democratic Party and the center of the Republican Party were relatively close together, ideologically speaking. If you look at where the center of gravity was in the Democratic Party and center of gravity in the Republican Party, mid-20th century, they weren't all that far apart. They could talk to each other because the ideological distance wasn't that big. There were points of agreement, but that was the weird point in American history. Throughout most of American history, the parties have been relatively far apart. Now, that means a couple of things. First of all, it means that we are in a period right now that in some ways is more normal for American history, but it also means that in principle, it's possible for American politics to depolarize. We just don't really know necessarily how to get the parties talking in let's say, more healthy ways.
And then came Elon Musk. Elon Musk, we'll talk about him when we come back and the effect he's having on all of this. Musk, where'd that come from? You know what? I got a little bit of allergy problem here today. 620 traffic now, WWL. 625, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking with our friend Justin Buechler, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University, about President Trump and his approval ratings, latest things he's up to. And somebody texted in and said, every time I hear you talk about Elon Musk, it's like something has not happened before. Bureaucratic control over policies and the size of government has been around for a long time. The fact is most of it was never done out in the open. You may not like his style, but the need to cut government waste and fraud is a necessity. I don't know who texted this in, but for years I've been saying that the bureaucracy is out of control. I've had conversations with you, Justin, about presidents for years now trying to deal with foreign policy because they could affect that more than they could the bureaucracy that is the federal government. However, I don't think it's accurate to say we've seen something like, or I think it is accurate rather to say we've never seen anything like Elon Musk before, who is appointed by the president but unelected. And the scorch and burn and scorch, whatever you want to say, approach to it where, you know, you fire, then you hire, then you fire, then you hire, and maybe it should be more surgical than a nuclear approach. Thoughts?
So there are a couple of things going on. One is we have seen presidential appointments. We have seen some aspects of presidents trying to govern through executive orders and executive power. We have not quite seen anything like DOGE and how you kind of finished up the question there with firing and rehiring and some of the chaotic elements of this process. That is relatively different. There is a chaotic element to this because it's not really being run with much of a, let's say, systematic analysis or grand plan. And yeah, that is different.
I saw somebody over the weekend opine that maybe it was chaos by design, but that sometimes they inadvertently got caught up in their own chaos. Accurate?
I think that's probably true. I think that there was a general goal of shrinking the government in some way. And part of the motivation is the belief that government itself is intrinsically bad, so you can just fire anyone haphazardly. And if you do that, you may find out every once in a while that you fired the person that you shouldn't have fired. So the chaos that was created was chaos created to some degree by a belief that it didn't matter who they fired, and they wound up finding out the hard way that actually it does matter who you fire.
My personal concern is I don't trust Elon Musk. I just don't, and I guess he's acting in the best interest of the government. I hope he's acting in the best interest of the government and America, but I just don't trust the guy. That's just me. When it comes to what he's saying now about Social Security is, whether you like it or not, an entitlement program, whether people like it referred to as that or not. But it is. It is one of the largest expenditures of the government, but he's kind of...
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almased. Almased is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almased. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Throwing reality into the face of politics here, and I don't think the Trump administration's liking it too much. Thoughts?
Well, if I remember correctly, he used the phrase Ponzi scheme.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that Social Security is funded is that you never actually get back the money that you put in. It was never funded that way, because when it was originally created, you had a bunch of retirees who were getting funded by the people paying in taxes immediately, and that has continued throughout the entire life of the program, which means anybody drawing benefits now is drawing benefits from people paying into the Social Security system.
Just to be clear, Professor, to keep it accurate so people don't start texting me, we're talking about buckets of money here, that it's not your money you're getting back. But people do, according to government statistics, draw far more from Social Security than they pay in. But the caveat is, had they been entitled to or allowed to invest their own money instead of being forced to contribute to Social Security, then maybe they wouldn't. That's fair?
Well, that's another element to it. So one element to it is, if you think about the rate of return that you get on Social Security, if you simply put it into something like an S&P index fund where you're getting somewhere like 8 to 10% per year, you would get far more back than you get in.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another element to it, which is that the money that you put into it is money that is immediately paid out to the current retirees, which means that it's sort of going on a constant cycle. And that means it's always on the verge of going broke.
So he's not really that far off. Is he speaking truth to the populace?
Yes, it is technically a Ponzi scheme in terms of the mechanics and the financing of the program. It is a Ponzi scheme.
Politically, nobody wants to hear that, but it is kind of true. Thank you, Professor. I appreciate your time. Justin Buechler, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University. We'll take a break, come back, talk about DOGE and the cuts in Social Security and what effects would that have on people and how necessary is it. 6:30, time for WWL First News. All right, some severe weather moving into the area between 9 and noon. Stay weather aware, which has become a thing to say. Monique Morrissey joins us now, senior economist with the Economic Policy Institute. Talk about Elon Musk and his comments about Social Security, which are not perhaps inaccurate, not politically palatable. What would it look like and what would it mean for Americans? Good morning, Monique. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you doing?
Very well. Thank you. I appreciate your time. So Elon Musk said it was a Ponzi scheme, which is not a nice phrase and certainly hints at chicanery. Other people have for years described it as robbing Peter to pay Paul. So I guess it's tomatoes, tomatoes, huh?
Well, I disagree with that characterization of Social Security. Social Security is like a lot of other government programs. You know, people pay and then they get something later, or vice versa. Like you go to school and it's paid for by taxpayers and then later on you pay taxes. So it's not any different from most government programs, is that there are different phases in your life when you're either paying in or you're taking out. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. But, you know, obviously you can call it a Ponzi scheme if you have an intention of closing it down, then it's true that people who paid in aren't going to get anything out of it. But that's only if you're intending to shut it down.
So what about the economic stability of it and continuing to fund it, whether you plan to shut it down or not? Can the government afford to keep funding it? I'm not arguing. I'm just trying to ask.
Absolutely. I mean, there is an issue with Social Security's finances, but it's actually a fairly moderate one, and it's perfectly solvable. So basically, because of the baby boomers retiring, the amount that's going out has been increasing, and this is totally normal, and it was planned for. The actuaries for Social Security knew about this decades ago and put more money in the trust fund, and now we're drawing down the trust fund. And people think that drawing down the trust fund is a problem, but that's what it was there for, because Social Security really is designed to be current contributions go to current beneficiaries. That is a completely normal thing. That's the way it's always functioned. But they built up a little bit of extra savings for the baby boomers, and the baby boomers are here now. The problem is that, you know, we also need to adjust things periodically. And the last time Social Security was adjusted was 1983. So it's high time that we increase revenues into the system, because costs long term are going up about 1% of GDP. So this is manageable. It's not like costs are going up, you know, increasingly year after year. It's like they went up and then they're going to level off, and we just need to close that shortfall.
You said drawing down trust fund. People text me and say that Congress has raided the trust fund. Are they drawing it down to pay Social Security? Are they drawing it down for other things? Tell me what's happening there.
Yeah, no, they're absolutely paying. They're drawing it down in order to pay benefits for the baby boomers. There is nothing wrong with that. So this is, you know, people who don't like Social Security, and most people like Social Security, by the way, and this is bipartisan. They're sort of ideological people who have an issue with Social Security, and then they like to say these things. But the vast majority of Republicans and Democrats love Social Security, and there's nothing, absolutely nothing wrong with drawing down the trust fund. That was what it was there for. In fact, what we should be saying is that the Social Security actuaries planned decades in advance for what they knew to be the post-war bulge of births, right? This is what happened. World War II. After World War II, a lot of babies were born, and you know that they need. That's a larger than usual cohort, and they planned around that. And so it's actually, you know, really, if it wasn't for the smears against Social Security, we should all be thanking the actuaries and people who work at Social Security for having seen this in advance and planned around it.
So is Social Security at risk, or if not, and you say it needs to be adjusted, do you adjust benefits, do you adjust retirement age, or do you just start collecting more from the people that are working?
Well, I mean, certainly the vast majority of Americans just want to put more revenue into the system. In fact, there's even support for expanding benefits and paying for them various ways. But let's say you don't even want to expand benefits. There's, you know, for example, there's an organization that's a bipartisan big tent organization called the National Academy of Social Insurance, and they recently repeated a survey they did, you know, I don't know, 10 years ago, and they just did it again. And it shows that when people are asked and they think about it, the vast, vast majority of Democrats and Republicans just want to increase revenues into the system. And this can be done by a very slow and gradual increase in the payroll tax rate. But also what's really popular is raising the maximum earnings that are taxable. So right now, if you make more than $176,000 a year, you actually don't pay Social Security taxes above that amount. And most people think that's unfair, understandably. That means Elon Musk and every, you know, they pay the same amount as a doctor, mm-hmm. and they pay a lower rate of their incomes than the average person. And so most people want to fix that. Doing away with that cap doesn't entirely fix the problem, but it gets a good chunk of it. And that's actually, one of the reasons that sort of billionaires are, worried about Social Security is that they understand that this is very popular and they don't want to pay taxes on that. That would be a big tax increase on billionaires who are currently paying very little in taxes as a share of their income. So that's what's made this, sort of a political football. But one thing that's clear is that among voters, there's bipartisan support for increasing revenues into the system. And again, we're not talking about a huge increase, a very gradual increase in the payroll tax rate combined with, scrapping the cap of the taxable earnings back would be sufficient to close the shortfall.
I know I have a neighbor that I help walk him through the Social Security process, and he's recently begun to collect it, and he was ardently against Social Security until those checks started arriving. And then, Monique, once those checks started to arrive, don't touch it. Keep the government away from my Social Security. That's what he tells me all the time. And I'm thinking, well, it kind of is a government program. Monique Morrissey is our guest, senior economist with the Economic Policy Institute. We'll talk about DOGE and waste in Social Security, what they've found, how much exists when we come back. 6:50, 10 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 6:56, 4 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Monique Morrissey, senior economist with the Economic Policy Institute. Elon Musk said that DOGE is a Ponzi scheme. Monique says, no, it really isn't. It was always designed to work the way it's working. Monique, when it comes to fraud, abuse, waste, all that stuff, has DOGE found any real waste in Social Security, or has a lot of it been, what are the facts behind the claims, I guess, what I'm trying to figure out?
Well, it's actually kind of funny if it wasn't so sad, but basically, DOGE is really a bunch of 22-year-olds running around and, who are programmers, and they don't understand, they don't actually understand the government program. They just understand programming, maybe. And so initially, Elon Musk and others have said stuff like, oh, there's 150-year-olds getting Social Security. And they said, oh, there's, millions of dollars being sent to 11-year-olds for small business loans. And it turns out, there's no basis for this. And some of these things were repeated by President Trump during his, speech to the joint Congress speech, which is sort of like the State of the Union, but for the first year. Anyhow, so all of these things, so people were like, what? No, there's been a lot of studies about fraud and abuse and there are a lot of money put towards preventing it. And how in the world could be throwing out these giant numbers, like talking about, $500 billion or $1 trillion of waste? And it turns out that this was actually Wired magazine that came up with an explanation for why they were saying 150-year-olds were getting benefits, is that it turns out that the code that you use in this program, if you don't have an exact death date, looks like you're 150 years old. So if they had even just understood a little bit of it, they would have looked and seen, are these people actually receiving benefits? And they weren't. So that's one way that they made a mistake. And again, it's one thing to make a mistake. It's another thing to double down on it. And they just, once they were found in this embarrassing error, it still gets repeated. The other error that they did, which I think is kind of funny, is that they thought these 11-year-olds were getting small business loans because they saw the code SBA. But that stands for Survivor Benefit Annuity, which means, it's the benefits you get if you're like parent as a service member or a federal government employee or somebody who's getting a pension and that person dies, then the orphan gets this annuity. It's not an SBA loan. It's not a Small Business Administration loan. It's a orphan annuity. So anyhow, again, that's what happens when you let 22-year-olds rummage through data. And, you know, the issue isn't just that they were making stuff up and they didn't understand what was going on, is that we had people, like, there are really, really strict rules about who can rummage through this data, because SSA records include not just people's social security number, which is bad enough, nobody wants that stuff leaked, but also like people's medical records, people's banking account numbers. You know, all of this information is stored as social security. And, you know, having people off-site access this, it countered every single possible precaution and rule that SSA had been doing to protect this data for years and years and years. So there are real issues about, you know, access to the data, but also a lot of this information was just, you know, was mistakes again by the 22-year-old who was, accessing this data off-site and didn't understand how the program worked.
Thank you. Appreciate your time. Monique Morrissey, who is the senior economist with the Economic Policy Institute, studies this for a living. I'm seeing the text line here. Some of you agree with what she says. Some of you disagree with what she says. This is America. Where does truth have anything to do with anything now? Nothing. Believe what you want. We'll be back in a flash. WWL.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.